This is our weekly broadcast and podcast called Your Hidden Power. I'm Doug Steffen, here to overview fear. First of all, we're going to talk with a woman named Monica Berg, who is instrumental in helping people understand the Kabbalah movement and how fear is not an option as you study that. I think that's my whole thing. The fear-based thinking and decisions that we make in fear are always wrong. Let's talk about that. We'll explore that with Ms. Berg. We also have Uri Geller joining us later in the hour, as usual, to talk about what we know about energy. Mary O'Malley will join us, and Maria Francesca Trilogy both have interesting new opportunities to explore with you. Let's bring in Monica Berg now, who is a mother, a wife, a sister, a daughter, a teacher. She integrates all of things important to her in her life into her mission of sharing her information with everybody who will listen. And I find that her approach is pretty fresh. I don't know much about Kabbalah, frankly. I think I know quite a bit about, if you will, sensitive thinking. It's certainly one of my passions and my objects in life in terms of finding out more about me and how I can help the world, whatever legacy I'm leaving behind, all of those things. And I think we need to encourage people to think in the most positive way. Nothing makes people feel good like words of encouragement. Young people especially need this, but so do adults. We all do. Society is short on encouragement. Look at the news media. And then there's one thing that I think maybe will highlight what we're talking about here today. Somebody wished me earlier to have a good day, a day of accomplishments. That's pretty powerful when you think about it. How do you come to have your own power? How do you acknowledge your own power? How do you figure out a focus on doing positive things? Let's discuss that with Monica Berg, who is here. She's been studying Kabbalah for many years. Monica, welcome to Your Hidden Power.
Hi, Doug. Thank you so much for having me.
Monica, by the way, is the author of the book Fear is Not an Option. She is the Chief Communications Officer for the Kabbalah Center International website, Kabbalah, KABBALAH.com. What do people most not understand about the message of Kabbalah, Monica?
Well, I think that the biggest misconception is that it's an ancient wisdom that is just for a few select people to study. I've been studying Kabbalah since I was 17, and what I find to be most profound is that it really gives you an understanding about the world, your place in it. It gives answers to our biggest questions of, you know, why do things happen? How are things that are perceived to be negative or bad really a gift? And really, Kabbalah, when you practice it, it takes you through a problem, where I found that, you know, other modalities take you around a problem or to deal with the problem or learn to kind of handle it. It really takes you through it. And when you get to the other side of any issue that you have, you are transformed by that for the better.
Mm-hmm. You started when you were young. I've noticed a lot of people as they were older, friends of mine who have embraced it. I was interested actually in it. And my friend Uri Geller has studied it because it has some connections to Judaism, doesn't it, in a way?
Correct. It does. That's where it stems from. And the beauty of it is that basically it decodes the Bible. It takes the stories, if you will, and it gives you the deeper understanding about what it is, and more importantly, how we can practically put that into our lives and use that wisdom to transform and to make it better. But it is a wisdom that is for everybody. It's universal. So even if somebody, you know, was very Christian or whatever their practice is, this just could enhance it.
I've noticed a number of celebrities have gotten in on the act in the last 10 years or so. I think it first started with Madonna. At least that's what I remember her as being one of the first to profess an interest in this and to study it. But there have been many others. Has that helped or hurt the movement?
Well, I think that that answer will vary depending on who you ask. And I think that the way I see it is that I think it's amazing. It just shows that it is universal and that their truth is truth, and people tend to attract themselves to that. So clearly we're doing something right.
One of the things that is this, I'm going to sort of steer us in the direction of your teaching about fear and what it does to us. But you just mentioned something I thought was very interesting, truth and what truth is. I find we all have our own truths, and what may be your truth or my truth may not agree because we have different backgrounds and we have different experiences. But I do know that I think there's a separation sometimes, not always, but sometimes between what is a fact and what is the truth. Do you know what I mean? One person and the word truth, how it plays with someone, and then the facts of a case or an instance or some circumstance may be different. Does that make sense?
It does. I think that there are facts, and then there are people's feelings about facts. And those feelings kind of lead us to believe different things. And then sometimes we end up in a place that's not very truthful. For me, when I speak about truth, I'm talking about being authentic and being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And those two words are very powerful. And I think it takes a lifetime to achieve. Some never do. And it starts with asking yourself hard questions and being honest with how you feel about them. That's where the truth comes in.
All right, let's talk about some of those questions in a moment. I'm with you, and sort of it lays itself well in my field because the authentic people on the radio or on television or in the public media, public arts, those who are able to express their vulnerability, whatever it may be and however they do it, tend to be the people that I think, anyway, are more credible, and they seem to be the ones that succeed over a long term versus people who put out a front or present themselves in an image, and it's not really them. If you're on the radio especially, it's easy for people to hear and see through that. Do you know what I mean? And it would be the same for a minister in a church or a rabbi in a synagogue or men of the cloth, women of the cloth. If you're not genuine, nobody's going to buy your act, right?
Absolutely. And in the end, you'll forget what you're even trying to say or
right.
why you started on your path.
Fear. We're making a big deal out of fear. I always say, Monica, that fear-based decisions are always wrong. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. Because you're not coming from a place of clarity. If fear is leading, that's all you're responding to. It covers every other thought, emotion, desire up because you're worried and you're feeding into the fear. And fear is all-consuming. That emotion is very powerful.
So is it that easily understood? For the purposes of our discussion, it's easy to say those things, but how easy is it to understand?
Well, I break it down in my book. I break fear down into three different types. There's healthy fear, there's real fear, and then there's illogical. Healthy fear is healthy. It's there. It's set up for our survival and our protection.
Go ahead. You're making probably the same example I was, but go ahead. Sorry I interrupted you.
For instance, to not go too edge to a cliff because you could fall, or don't put your hand on an open flame because it will hurt, or even that intuitive feeling, that feeling we get in our stomach, in our gut, that tells us not to do something. For instance, if you're about to walk into an elevator and somebody's already in there and something makes you feel uncomfortable and you don't want to go inside, those kinds of responses that we have, those are healthy and they're there to protect us.
Mm-hmm. So what is not healthy then? And what doesn't protect or service?
Okay, so there's one more that is healthy, which is real fear. That's based in reality. It's the idea that, we are human and people do die. Fear of losing our loved ones, fear of dying ourselves, fear of pain or change. But even this can be a motivator for us for growth. For instance, if we do have that fear of, dying or losing our loved ones, we can make sure that we spend every day of our lives doing things we love, things we believe, and spending it with people that we really, truly care about. So that can kind of guide us in a very positive way. The one that has no place in our lives, that we spend way too much time consumed in, is illogical fear. So that's the fear of spiders, heights, elevators, fear of what people think about us, right? All of these feelings.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about fears, and I have the perfect example, Monica, of what drives me nuts when it comes to fear and fear-based thinking. The fraudulent, what used to be legitimate news media is no longer, it's fraudulent, it's misrepresenting, we talk about truth versus facts, that sort of thing. I saw a headline today, the next recession is going to be worse and it'll be sooner than you think. Mm-hmm. And that kind of garbage that we fill ourselves, those people who sit around and watch all those news channels, Fox and MSNBC and CNN, to no avail, it's just drivel. And listen to all those fools that are up there. You can hear in my voice how angry it makes me, because it is just nonsense. And when you fill people up with thoughts or things, and we tend to react to stuff. Oh my God, if there is a recession, maybe I better take all my money out of the bank and put it in my mattress, or whatever the hell else it is that people think. There's no truth to any of this stuff. It's a spin. No truth. That flies in the face of what we were talking about. Factually speaking, there is nothing to it. There may be the truth for some politicos or people who want to disrupt whatever is going on. Do you think this is a good example? Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's a great example. That's exactly why I wrote this book, because think about this. Somebody who reads that, right? They woke up in the morning, they're in a good mood, they have focused goals for the day, then they read this headline, and then, oh my God, now I'm worried, I'm fearful, I'm panicked. And then it steals from you. That's what fear does to us all the time. It steals our days, it steals our time, it steals our dreams, because we get caught up in wherever else these things take us. And I think that that is a perfect example, exactly.
Yeah, and then something in here about opioids and people taking opioids and that kind of stuff. They're everyday things that do fill us full of fear. So let's talk about although there are circumstances, and you write about it in the book, how fear can help you with these, you mentioned the three kinds of fear. But how do we get rid of? I know you want people to read the book, Fear is Not an Option, but give us a couple of things that will bring us into it, to give us hope that there is a way to eradicate these fears that are meaningless.
Well, the first thing, because it does take commitment and mental work, and it does take time and energy to really eradicate your fear, which is the ultimate goal. And it starts with really every day realizing that the only thing that's feeding the fear is you. So first you have to make a decision that fear is no longer an option. And then from that place, which I recommend in the book, you identify your fears. You actually categorize them to see what is real, what is healthy, and what is illogical. And then that really narrows it down. And from that place, you can absolutely remove them. And I think the biggest motivator, and this is what I did, is I asked myself this question, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And then I went out and did that. So instead of fighting the fear and trying to say, okay, because that's a lot of energy to fight something, to fight a thought. But instead, you just push it aside and say, okay, what would I actually do if I wasn't afraid? And spend your time and energy doing that.
Yeah. Moving yourself ahead. You may have a lot of dreams and goals, things that you have in your life you want to achieve, and you haven't done them or haven't dared to this point because you've been afraid to do it. We all know somebody like this. You may be somebody like this. If you think your life will change just by you being you, it will if you have, again, going back to what I think about thoughts being things, if you have no fear or just healthy fear, and that's what Monica is trying to teach, then that's the way to move ahead. So if you go to Kabbalah.com, K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, Kabbalah.com, learn about this philosophy and check out the book, Fear is Not an Option. I find both of these things to be very helpful and a good way to move yourself forward. Good to have you here, Monica Berg, on Your Hidden Power. Uri Geller will join us in this half hour, along with our psychic Mary O'Malley and our astrologer Maria Francesca Trilogy. Uri joins us from his home in Tel Aviv. We've been talking about fear and Kabbalah, and I wonder, because it has a Jewish derivative, what, if any, practice of Kabbalah you have followed, Uri?
Well, first of all, Kabbalah is an esoteric, I would call it an esoteric method. It's a discipline and a school of thought that originated in Judaism. Now, some people say that it originated thousands of years ago. It's a traditional Kabbalist in Judaism, and it's basically called Mekubal. Mekubal means, the Holy One. And throughout the centuries, or even thousands of years, a lot has been written about the Kabbalah. And there is one very powerful word in the Kabbalah, which says, read Zohar. Zohar means bright, bright light, something shining. So maybe the Kabbalah emanates from, you know, Doug, this is really crazy because I'm in a car in Tel Aviv and I'm passing a restaurant called Shine. I just mentioned the word Shine, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yes.
So there you go. This is something Kabbalistic here. And a lot of people have started practicing the Kabbalah hundreds of years ago. In the Kabbalah, you have letters, figures, drawings that are very meaningful, that have connection to the universe and probably directly to God, whoever believes in Kabbalah. I'm a believer in Kabbalah, and I don't practice it, but I believe in it. And when I speak to kind of people who are almost like prophets in the knowledge of Kabbalah, they show me the mysticism and the mystical connections between letters and figures. It's really, really amazing. This is not a coincidence. It's almost like this Zohar, this power of the Kabbalah was created out there in the universe. And, you know, Madonna, a very famous movie stars and singers, they kind of swear by the Kabbalah. There right. are lots of Kabbalah institutions that are open. And again, Kabbalah's definition varies according to the tradition and the aims of those following it. Now, some, unfortunately, don't want to mention names, you know, there's a lot of profit involved in Kabbalah, and some people are against that. What do you think, Doug? You heard of the word Kabbalah many, many times.
Well, how I think it best applies, Uri, is to try to get people to get away from fear-based thinking. The focus, as I understand it, or much of the focus of Kabbalah, is to get you to think about things that you dream about, the thoughts that you have, the goals that you have, to help people significantly achieve. The teaching is to bring folks away from fear-based thinking. People would change a lot if they weren't always so afraid of everything.
That's true, but we must remember that Kabbalah originally developed within the realm of Jewish tradition, and Kabbalists often use classical Jewish sources to explain and demonstrate its esoteric teachings. And you know that these teachings are held by followers of Judaism to mm-hmm. define the inner meaning of both the Hebrew and the Bible and traditional rabbinical literature. So it is very, very much rooted in the Jewish belief system.
One of the things that we have, this is the sort of thing that requires people to think a little bit more and to visit it, because it's not something you digest in a 4 or 5 minute conversation. An example of that is last week we were talking about things that we don't really know a lot about, like the energy that we share, the thoughts or thing, that whole business about mind energy, which is basically your stock and trade, because the books that you've written about the power of the mind, things that we can't see, and this makes it difficult for some people to understand it because they can only see the results of it. For example, you using your mind to bend a spoon or bend a key or something like that. They see the results of what happens, but they don't see how it happens, and therefore they sometimes are afraid of that sort of thing. Are they not? When people ever come to you and say, "You scare me, Uri."
Yes, absolutely, Doug. I brought mind energy into a tangible mode. You could actually see the spoon bending. And with mind energy, you can really do whatever you desire. You can achieve it using mind power. Remember, all physical reality is made up of vibrations of energy. Even your thoughts, Doug, are vibrations of energy. Now, while it sounds like a concept of theory, this is a new reality today. It's to do with quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum entanglement, and your thoughts have a powerful influence on your life. So, yes, I'm all for mind energy and to use it.
Well, I think that we use it or lose it, and you risk, if you're not on the right way, I think you cut your life short. I really do. I think people in their thoughts are what kill people. The idea that your mind and body are connected and spirit as it works with your mind, all these things become somewhat complex, but they really, in a simple way, get back to the thing that we repeat ad nauseum, thoughts of things. And if you're afraid of something, it starts working your mind. Much cancer research has been done about what causes heart disease and cancer, and most of it comes not from what you're exposed to physically, but what you're thinking and how you're acting.
Absolutely, Doug. And going a step before cancer research and so on, if you look at sports people, basketball, footballers, tennis players, golfers, they excel. The ones who are champions knew how to dip into the power of their mind, learn how to use it, and win. So this is a great subject, and we might continue it next week. Okay, Doug?
Well, we'd see. Yeah, the influence this might have on those who become winners at the Olympics. Yeah, that'd be a good thing for us to work on. Thank you, Uri. Uri Geller's website, which is very enjoyable, very positive, and very informational, URIGELLER, UriGeller.com. Your hidden power, Mary O'Malley, is someone for whom I have great respect. I have, in fact, used her talent to help me make decisions about things, and I think that's really what people who are good at what she does do. In fact, they help you with your views. We were talking about facts versus truth a few minutes ago, Mary. You may have heard us talking about that in the sense that people make decisions based on fear. And most people who come to you for help at PsychicScout.com are afraid of something, aren't they?
Yeah. A lot of times they're just afraid of the decision they're about to make or having to make a decision or that they've made a decision that gotten them in trouble. Sometimes they're afraid of things that are going on in the world, you know, all different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So you have you've set up, because you have this new website that people are attracted to, I think if you go to PsychicScout.com, you can find out a lot of things about how to help yourself, including free classes that Mary offers every week. Are you doing it everywhere? Are you just starting it this week? How are you doing this?
I'm starting it this week, and I'll probably do it once a month or so.
All right. So
it's an introduction to the soul retrieval.
Right. I said let's talk about the concept of soul retrieval before you came on. So let's talk about the concept of soul retrieval. Don't you think pretty much everybody knows what their soul is at this point?
I think so. They know there's another part of them that exists. No matter what, whether they're in a body or not in a body, right?
And it's an energy. And as Einstein, Uri is happy to remind us that Einstein says energy never goes away. It may have different forms. So for those of you who may or may not agree, depending on your religious affiliation, that there is such a thing as the afterlife or past lives or reincarnation, the continuation of life, all of those things, they do involve the soul, which is something that we wonder about because it's one of those things. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it. So, is it, right? I mean, that's what they want to know what they can actually see or understand. So the concept of the soul isn't something that's foreign, but retrieving it. What does that mean? If you're going on a course in soul retrieval, what are we retrieving?
Well, this is an old shamanistic tactic, and it's been going on for, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of years, that as we go through life and we experience traumas, big traumas, little traumas, at those points, a piece of ourselves actually stays in that moment of the trauma, a piece of our soul. And so, as you know, we go through our life, and pretty soon, all these pieces of our soul is missing, and we kind of lose our mojo, you know, so to speak. So the soul retrieval practice is going back and finding those pieces of our soul that we've left in a state of trauma and retrieving those pieces. And also, from what Spirit tells me, you know, this goes hand in hand. When we release a piece of our soul, we tend to pick up pieces of other people's souls, and they're not really doing us any good. We need to release those too. So it's retrieving what belongs to us and releasing what doesn't belong to us.
You mean in terms of energy, experience, when you mm-hmm. say it belongs to us and some of it doesn't, what does that mean?
Well, this is a simple energy exchange, and Spirit told me it always goes around. If we're releasing a piece of ourselves, we tend to also pick up a piece of something else. And it's energy, and the modality I use is really a simple energy exchange. And it's weird because just in the process of asking for that piece of your soul back or that energy back, you can really feel the difference. Like I notice when I ask for a piece of my soul back, it generally goes right into certain chakra points. And
really?
It totally makes sense. Yeah, it totally makes sense. So it just, you know, the whole process leaves you feeling more whole, lighter, less confused, and more yourself.
All right, so you want to be that. This is something that's online, free classes Thursday and Sunday, at least this week, to get started. The concept of soul retrieval explained so you can work it on yourself. Go to psychicscout.com. Mary O'Malley's website is psychicscout.com. You're listening to Your Hidden Power, and we're happy to have with us, as usual, Maria Francesca Trilogy, who you may contact at smbworks@earthlink.net if you're intrigued by some of the things that she talks about, writes about. Her book, Life is Good When You Do the Work, is available now also through the same connection. We have been talking in these continuing visits with Maria, the different planets and how they interact with us and our realities. This is the year in Chinese horoscopes. This is not the year 2018. It's the year, I don't know what it is, 38, 59, 28 hike or something. But it is the year of the dog. And Maria is going to explain how Chinese horoscopes work and how you can figure out, I'm a dog, born in 1946. So the years denote at certain, how many different animals are there in Chinese horoscope?
Well, it's very interesting because, good morning, everyone. The Chinese horoscope is 12 animals, just like the 12 different signs in the Western astrology. So there is an animal, there are 12 animals, and they're based on a 12-year cycle. So anyone, you can go in and put Chinese astrology and you will find the year of your birth, and it will tell you what your animal is. So if you were born in 1946, as Doug is, then this is your year. It's the year of the dog. And then you come 12 years up from there and it would be 1958 and 1970. So it is a 12-year cycle, similar to what we call our Jupiter cycle. So
what does the year of the dog mean for persons who are not dogs?
Yeah, for anybody. The year of the dog, you know, it's sort of like there's an overview of what it means as well, and there's a prediction that this is going to be a year good in all respects. But it's also going to be a year of somewhat, you know, people exhaustion. It's sort of like if you think about dogs, you know, dogs are loyal, they're strong, they're protective. All of those energies are available during this year coming, well, you know, of 2018 to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful because, you know, if you let a dog just run wild, they do. They'll just run and jump and do all this, and then there's this exhaustion afterward. If you see dogs, they're either running around or laying down.
All right. And, are there other things that would influence, like with a regular, when you're doing your practice astrologically, there is the sun sign, the moon sign, the rising sign. So are there other things that help to mold your picture of yourself? Because it's not just a dog. I am all of those things, and you're laughing because you know me as well as you do, and I'm laughing to myself about some of the things that you've just described. But there are other influences, aren't there?
You mean with the year, with what it means to be a dog?
Or? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course. Right. There is how you navigate through life in general. So if you added this description to what the year of the dog represents, then you have to look at the whole idea of the behaviors of what dogs do and how they are in the world.
All right, but let's take you, we got about a minute left here. Let's take you or Kara, who's at the controls. She's an ox or whatever, whoever the sign is.
Yes.
How does that blend with the dog? That was basically what I was asking.
Yes.
Other people.
So there, every animal, and I didn't know if we were going to have enough time to go through that, but you can go on, as I said, to the Chinese year, and they will tell you how the dog will interact, like with me. Dogs and rabbits really like each other. Mm-hmm. So there will be a good connection. Be good luck.
Dogs chase rabbits. What are you talking about? Dogs chase rabbits.
Well, yeah, but it's fun. Do you know what I mean? It's not done in any kind of a negative way.
They're not going to eat the rabbit at the end of the day. That's not going to happen. All right. So that's what I was trying to figure out. But there's the ox is all of those things. Find out how you blend with those and how your sign, if you will, in Chinese. It's a fascinating to actually work on. Check it out. And Maria's connection is smbworks@earthlink.net.